listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats. Today, we have Stumped for you. Stumped is a game that we play here on the show where Scott and I try to ask each other interview questions about web development, and we see if the other person can answer them. Usually we make fools of ourselves and we learn a thing or two along the way. Today, we're going to focus entirely on CSS. Last time we did one on just JavaScript questions. So today is entirely CSS questions. So buckle up for that. Today, we are sponsored by three awesome companies. Sanity, which is a structured content CMS. Sentry, which is an error exception and performance tracking. And Cloudinary, who does your image hosting transformation optimization, you name it.
Oh, wow.
We'll talk about all them partway through the episode. I'm really excited to talk to Scott today because he says he has a story about a bear and he won't tell me until he starts this show.
Cracking up about this right now. I'm like, yeah. So to give you some context, I live in a major city. This is not like in the wilderness here. Was it last week or a week ago? There was a thing on the Ring app and it's like, hey, there's a bear in the neighborhood over here. And I like looked at the map and it's like, I don't know, it's a pretty good distance from our house. It's, you know, a couple miles. I'm like, okay, that's weird that there's a bear here. And a bunch of people are like, I've never seen a bear in Denver. There's no way there's actually a bear here. Because yeah, maybe in Boulder, right? They're in the foothills, whatever. Bear in Denver? No, I don't think that's a thing. And then I get another Ring alert, maybe, you know, 20 minutes later. And it's like, hey, I just saw a bear in the neighborhood. And then this one's like two blocks from our house. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this bear is like in our backyard. And I got my office door open. The dogs are outside. I'm like, there's a bear.
What kind of bear is it?
There's going to be a black bear.
Okay.
Yeah, black bear. They're going to be pretty chill. I mean, black bears around here, they're not going to just attack you.
Like raccoons.
Yeah. They're like raccoons, right? They're just looking for a thing.
I still would not mess with a black bear.
Oh, of course. I ain't getting near that thing. We live by a gulch, like a big river. And so it's probably just grazing down the river looking for fish or whatever.
Gulch.
So this was a bunch of people were thinking that was like a, you know, just a prank. And I was thinking, it could be a prank, right? Never seen a bear, never heard about a bear here. And then I saw a news report. It's like, we found the bear. And they found the bear and they found it pretty close. And so I thought that was the end of it. I just got a ping on my Ring app a minute ago and it says, bear spotted at park. Look at the park. That's the park we go to. And then it says bear on walking path. There's another bear. Why? What is going on with these bears?
Oh, that's hilarious. We once had a bear. We were renting a cottage in Pennsylvania. And there was all of a sudden we were just kind of just like hanging out. And all of a sudden their bear just walks across the thing. And we grab all the kids and get them inside. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's a bear. And then my brother-in-law, it starts walking away. And my brother-in-law follows it down.
Oh yeah. You don't follow a bear. I don't follow
a
bear.
No. Definitely not. Wow.
Yeah. One time we were at a Airbnb. It was in Rocky Mountain National Park. But like, you just see a black bear chilling in the tree a little off in the distance. You're like, oh, he's just hanging out in the tree.
Yikes.
He's close enough where you can see him from your room. But, you know, it's cool.
I don't know if I've said this before, but like you're ever sitting around with some friends and you're not sure what to talk about or you want some really good stories. All you have to do is just drop a little story about a raccoon or a moose or a bear. Mm. And then all of a sudden, the stories just start come cranking out. And everybody has these crazy stories.
Everybody's got something. I went to lunch one time with a guy and he was telling me about he used to work in Boulder at a restaurant. And Boulder, compared to Denver, Boulder's in the foothills of the mountains, right? It's like basically mountains are right there. And he said it was his job to scare the bears away from the trash can with pots and pans. So he would run out and start clanging together some pots and pans to get the bears to run off. Like it is a big raccoon. Like, so I think people out here just view bears a little bit differently.
All right, let's get into Stumped.
Yeah, in case you wanted bear podcast episode today. Yeah, you got it.
We should start a secondary podcast of
Bear Chat.
Bear Chat. All right. You want to go rock, paper, scissors for who gets to go first?
So when we do this, to give you some how it's made, Wes always writes a script to randomly pick one. And I can always count on Wes to have a script that will randomly pick one of these things.
I feel like if something is my superpower, writing random code into the console.
Oh, yeah.
That does stuff on the page is my superpower.
It's totally your superpower. I 100% agree with that.
This is the first time I've done this where I need to select a random thing and I use the array.at method instead of the square brackets. And I'm a big fan because I didn't have to floor the value. If you are new or you didn't listen to the podcast where we talked about that, there is a new at method in JavaScript on all arrays. And you can say dot at, and you can say at one, that will give you the first thing, or zero, actually, that will give you the first thing. But you can do -1, and that will give you the last thing. And the cool thing about that is you can pass it a decimal and it will do the flooring for you. So if you pass it math.random times, in my case, questions.length, and it gives you 32.7, it'll just floor it for you and give you the 32nd question, or in our case, it's 33rd because it's zero based. All right, let's do rock, paper, scissors, see who goes first. Ready?
Yes.
Rock, paper, scissors, throw.
Shoot. Rock. Oh, come on. Scissors. We both did scissors. Rock,
paper, scissors.
Scissors.
Shoot. Oh, you win. All right, you get to ask first.
It's so funny with the latency. Each one gets progressively slower. All right. The first question that I'm going to ask is, which property allows you to control the shape or appearance of the marker of a list?
List style type.
List style type. Wow.
Boom.
I never use list style type. That's amazing. I wouldn't know list style, but list style type.
You no always thanks. Shorthand yeah. it. Not a big bullet person.
I can't tell you the last time I've ever changed it. It's either it's on or it's off. I don't care. Who cares?
Awesome. I got a question for you. What is a pseudo element and what is a pseudo class?
Oh, pseudo class. That's interesting. I know what a pseudo element is when you use the double colons and then after. And then you can define essentially an element in your HTML using content.
Yep.
And the content can be anything from an entity to text to whatever. And you can style that baby up and whatever. Now, what is a pseudo class? Is a pseudo class the same thing just with one colon instead of two?
No.
Okay. I know there is a subtle difference there between the two colons and the one colon.
Yeah.
And the two colons used to have less browser support, but now it's two colon all the way. I don't know. What is a pseudo class? A pseudo class is what, like an nth child of, maybe?
That is an example of one. So like a pseudo element, you got it right. That's an actual element that is created when you use them. And a pseudo class is used to define a specific state of an element, most likely being hovered, checked, empty, enabled.
Oh.
But of course, required, nth child, just it is still an element that you declared, but it is in a specific state.
You know what? I don't know if I would have called those a pseudo class, but that makes sense.
Call them pseudo selectors.
Because it is. They're all pseudo selectors, right? They're defined a certain way with the colon, and that is what like the syntactical defining characteristic of it is. But interesting. Yeah, I've never heard the word pseudo class before. I was thinking that might have been something interesting, but yeah.
Do you want a chance to get some bonus points here, Scott?
Yeah!
There are 5 pseudo elements. Can you name all 5? Or can you name more than 2?
Can I name more than before and after?
Yeah.
Was one of them the scroll bar?
Nope.
Okay, then no.
There is first letter.
First letter. Oh.
First line and selection.
So first line is a pseudo element?
Yeah. If you want to style the or add, I would call that like a pseudo class.
Yeah, pseudo selector.
But it's considered here a pseudo element. The first letter and the first line, I think it's because you can give a width and a height and all of those things to the first line and first letter.
Interesting. Ah, that's blowing my mind. Yeah, that you'd call that an element.
Selection.
Oh, selection. Yeah, selection.
Kind of makes sense there, I guess. Yeah.
Well, see, if the scroll bar was one of them, I would have gotten selection because that's the other thing that you go to the custom snippet, CSS snippets
totally.
For.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Stump me.
It's time to get stumped. Who's ready to get stumped? All right. Next question here for you is, this is a doozy, Wes. What is the difference between a block inline and inline block? Get the easy ones.
Oh, that's easy. A block element is something that takes the whole flow of the document, the whole width generally. An inline element is something that is literally inline. So you create it and it does not break onto a new line. Maybe the amount of width that it takes is deciphered by the content that is inside of it and you cannot apply a width or a height to it. And then an inline block element is like inline, but it also allows you to override those values by giving them a width and a height value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. I'm going to give you a good one. I got that one right, correct?
Do you need to ask? Yes, you got it.
Do I know the basics?
Video number two of how to write CSS. Yeah, or HTML and CSS.
What is a combinator selector?
Man, for me, the things I get hung up the most in these questions is not the concepts. It's like, what are these things actually called?
Yeah.
So I would assume this is something like a plus, like the siblings. I don't know if the sibling selector would be included in that, but the neighbor selector, the plus, or this little squiggle, the tilde selector, which allows you to do anything. So the plus is anything next to this thing, and the tilde is the same thing, but like, is that it? Combiners, the things like the plus and the tilde, and yeah?
Yeah, you got it. A combinator is a character in a selector that connects two selectors together. So tilde
is the parent selector one, or not the parent selector, child,
parent child is a selector, even though there's no character, right? So yeah, you got it. You nailed it.
Cool. Next question is, also Wes, this was a two-parter. The first part's easy. The second part's not as easy.
All right, let me have it.
What is specificity and how to calculate specificity?
I can't say specificity.
I think it's a bit at this point.
No, it's literally not. Specificity is the calculation of when two rules are overlapping, color black, and then another selector says color green. How do you choose which one wins out over the other? And the answer to that is there's a complicated calculation called specificity, and things like the selector specificness goes into it. Where they are they inline? Do they come later in the document versus the other one? Is it a style tag versus a linked? All those things play into how they are calculated. How that actually happens, like if you were to give me two selectors and tell me to calculate it myself, I have no clue how to actually do that. I just know sort of the 90% of the way there, where they are selectors, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah. So you don't know the calculation?
I don't know the calculation. Tell me, what is it? I'm stumped.
Yeah. You know, there's like some point value thing to it that exists. This doesn't say that. So this basically says, you know, the following types increase by specificity: type selectors, class selectors, ID selectors. Contextual selectors are more specific than single element selectors. The embedded style sheet is closer to the element be styled. The last rule. Yeah. I mean, this is all basic stuff.
I know all those.
Right.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually tell you how to calculate it in here.
Okay.
So I think you get enough points because you've identified how to determine specificity.
Yeah.
But what's the number for the whole number thing? Okay, so here is the point value. There's specificity values. So let's see. Here's an explanation about how to calculate specificity. So the result of specificity calculation takes a 4 comma-based values, A, B, C, D, where the value in column A is the most important and D is the least important, okay? So inline style has a 1 in column A, so inline, most specific, right? Then an ID adds a 1 in column B, and a class is a 1 in column C, and then an element reference is a 1 in column D. You can read the values as if it was a number, for instance, 1, 0, 0, 0, as in just the element, reads as 1,000. So 1,000 is a higher number than 100, which would be an ID selector. So 1,000 greater than 100, more specific, right? So that's how it goes, is it just ends up being like a giant old number. But yeah, it's kind of interesting there. I've never, ever been like, let me pull up the numbers and calculate this specificity. That's not something that people typically do. So if you're hearing these numbers and thinking, oh gosh, I don't know this, I don't know if you necessarily need to know those specifics, but it's there.
Yeah. My eyes just glaze over when I start to hear that.
Me too. That's why I did the science man voice, because it
science
was
science man.
Yeah. It was time to get into science man mode.
All right. The next one we have here is a true or false question. This is going to be pretty simple, I think. The translate function in CSS can move the position of an element on the Z-axis for all y'all Canadians. True or false?
This is a trick question. Translate itself cannot move the Z. You need translate 3D or you need translate Z.
Ding, 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 ding. Killed it. You're right. Translate can only do X and Y axis. If you want to go on the Z axis, which is between your nose and the monitor, you need to use, like Scott says, translate Z or translate 3D.
Yeah. All right.
Nice.
Yeah, it is nice. You know what else is nice? Sanity. Sanity is the perfect place to hold all of your data for your backend and query it. It's all really, really neat. And Wes knows all about Sanity. Wes, would you like to talk a little bit about Sanity?
I do. Sanity, we've talked about them a million times. You know Sanity, their structured content CMS.
You know Sanity.
But they are more than that. They do images, so you can resize images on the fly. You can compress them on the fly. They have this really cool thing where if you have like a hero image, you can draw a circle around the thing that matters, like somebody's face or the product that's in a photo. And then when it crops that image, because you're generating 16 different versions of that image for the picture element, it will make sure that that thing is actually always in view. So you're not getting a call from someone at 3 a.m. in the morning being like, well, on my Android phone, it's being cropped off and the CEO is not happy about that. So that's really, really important. That's just one of the many things that they do. They do reviewing changes. Maybe I'll talk about that one on the next ad read. So check it out for your next app or website, sanity.io/syntax. That will give you double the free usage tier. Thank you, Sanity, for sponsoring.
Sick. Okay, let's get into it here. What is the difference between resetting and normalizing in CSS?
Oh, okay. So a CSS reset will bring everything back to zeros. And what that means is that there is a set of defaults in the browser, things like bullet point, indentation, H1 through H6 sizing, some default margin and padding. All those things are some like decent defaults. And a reset will take all of those off and bring you back to absolutely zero. Whereas a normalize will just make sure that those defaults are set, but from browser to browser, that they are consistent, because there is a little bit of inconsistency from browser to browser in what their defaults look like.
Perfect.
Bing, 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 bing. Perfect. All right, we need some hard ones. Feel free to fish around for a tricky one. I'm not going to give you this one. This one is, what is CSS?
CSS, also known as cascading style sheets.
Oh.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't, I don't think we mentioned this off of the jump. This is a CSS only stumped. Did you say that?
Yeah, I did. I did.
I was having the feeling that you didn't say that.
Oh, this is actually kind of an interesting one. How do you load a CSS resource conditionally? And I'm going to ask you, you can give me a JavaScript version, but give me a CSS only version as well.
How do you load conditionally?
A CSS file. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is not something that I've done. I'm not going to even bother with the JavaScript one, because that's, you just add.
Just do JavaScript.
You just do JavaScript. You just add the element. So I don't know if this works. And this is just me, you know, galaxy braining, trying to come up with something here. But let's say, if you don't know this, there is an import syntax in CSS. What is that import syntax? But
it's at import.
It's at import. It's been used forever. In fact, it's funny because Magento used to have all of their CSS way back in the day, all imported. And people would be like mad about that. Like developers would be mad about that. Like I think there was some sort of performance degradation to that in the past. I don't know what it is nowadays. But either way, there is an import syntax in CSS. So I'm wondering, does the import syntax work with media queries? And perhaps you could have a media query that could then import a specific style sheet. Does that satisfy the condition?
Boo! You absolutely nailed it. Wow.
Something I've never done before. That was, yeah. That's
good. I was surprised I saw this one. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So the example is at media prefers dark color scheme dark, or you could literally do any media query. And then inside of that media query, at import the URL of the CSS file.
I'm shocked that that was right.
Interesting. I'm impressed. I don't think I would have got that.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Wes.
It also says you can do it with JavaScript with window.matchMedia, which is kind of interesting. Huh. So that's kind of like a media query, but in JavaScript.
Interesting.
Cool. Wow. Good job.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
Yeah. Give me a hard one.
Okay. Here's a good one. Is there a reason why you would want to use translate instead of absolute positioning? Or is there a reason you'd want to use absolute positioning instead of translate.
Yeah, so absolute positioning gives up its spot in the flow of the document. So as soon as you position absolute something, the elements below it, which were usually pushed down or to the side because it took up room, then just kind of scoot up behind it, because I always say that when you absolute position something, it becomes a ghost. Ooh, right? Because it just floats around like that and it goes over top of everything. And translate is it still respects the position, whether that is absolute, static, fixed, or sticky, but then you can skirt it around left or right, up or down, without actually affecting the content around it, the other elements around it.
Skirt. Yeah.
Skirt, skirt.
Yeah, I'll totally. And also, you'll probably want to use translate too if you're animating. I mean, you can use them in coordination with each other, but yeah, if you're changing the position in an animation, but yeah.
Yeah, translate is more performant than a absolute position.
Yep. Made for animation. Made for that type of thing. Cool.
All right, let's find a good one here.
Oh, before we take the next one, let's take a minute to talk about Sentry at sentry.io. It's the perfect place to see all of your errors and exceptions happen in your application in a giant formatted table where you can assign them to people. You can see all of the information about them. You can attach them to GitHub issues. You can do a ton with this thing. One of my favorite things is the ability to mark something as complete and then see it pop up back as hey, you said you fixed this thing. And this thing, you didn't fix this thing. It's funny, you can set up special alerts for that and everything. The performance tracking tools, which are brand new in Sentry, are incredible. We use them very, very, very closely when we were launching our updated version of Level Up tutorials. We wanted to make sure that we could see exactly how the new site was impacting performance for all of our users. And let me tell you, the user misery score went down. So we absolutely rely on something like this. This is a tool that we check every single day. We get alerts set up for it. We use Sentry nonstop. So head on over to sentry.io. Use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase and all one word. And I do say, when I say I check it nonstop, that's not because I have nonstop bugs. It's because, you know, it's always good to have a handle on those things. Yeah, we're absolutely drowning in Sentry issues over here. That's not the case, no. But thank you so much for Sentry for sponsoring. All right, next question, Wes. What do you got for me?
Let's see here.
I said something about using the Level Up tutorial site as a playground in one ad read, Wes, or something in this show. And somebody's like, I know you used the site as a playground, so I figured this bug might be. I was like, no, don't get that impression. We have tests. It's not like the admin tools. Yeah, that's a playground. But the rest of the site is very, very solid.
All right, here's an interesting one. And I don't think that there's like a definitive absolute answer here, but I think that you can come up with a pretty good rule of thumb on this one. When should you use CSS Grid and when should you use CSS Flexbox?
When should you use Grid and Flexbox? Yeah, this is like the question, right? And for most cases, I would say nowadays, most cases kind of end up using Grid. Grid's very good at what it does, but Flexbox, here's when I reach for Flexbox. I typically reach for Flexbox when I want to fit a bunch of things on one line. And I use Grid typically when I want to have some sort of structure to them. So when I need it to have a more secure structure, I go for Grid. When I want it to be a little bit more flowy, I go with Flexbox, which, I mean, that's such an abstract answer, but that's really the way I approach it. So like, say I have cards, I want to use Grid. I want to have a grid of cards. If I want to have a navigation that has a bunch of block level elements, you know, you could always have them be inline block, whatever, or you could flexbox them and then shift them to the right or something like that. So that's typically what I'm doing. I know that you can do multi-line flexbox very easily. I know that there's a lot of overlap there. So that's typically why I reach for one or the other.
You said one thing here is that I typically use flexbox when I want it on one line and then Grid when it is both columns and rows. And I think that's a good way to put it is flexbox is one dimensional. You literally have an axis either left to right or top to bottom, and Grid can be two dimensional. And then there's a really interesting thing here that I saw is that you typically use flexbox when it's content first. And that makes sense because flexbox flexes to the content that is in the items, and you use Grid when it is layout first. And that's both of those things aren't 100% true, but generally, yes, those are true. And Grid, you can have automatic rows that grow to the size of the content, but generally, yes.
Hey, tell that to Flex Grow and Flex Shrink, huh?
Yes, yes.
That's got to be one of the most Googled things of all time. Flexbox is squishing my image or growing. What is it doing? You know?
Yeah. So true. Just it's not what you expect for it to happen. Right.
The default functionality. Yeah. Please don't do that. Yeah.
All right. Give me one.
Let's see. Ooh, this is a good one. Ooh. Oh, ho, ho, ho. All right, Wes, I got you here. I got to get you. I'm going to get you on this one. Going to be stumped. The at rule in CSS. I need you to tell me all 8 at rules in CSS.
Oh.
And the at rule is the A, little squiggly A.
Yeah. You have at media.
At media.
At import.
At import. Some of these are going to be real hard. You'll have the possibility to get a few more.
At supports.
Yeah, nice one.
Like, what's the content queries one?
There's two low-hanging fruit.
Keyframes?
Keyframes, that's one of the low-hanging, yeah.
Like, CSS, trying to think, like, there's animation at keyframe.
We're halfway there.
So you animate...
So we had keyframes, supports, media, and import.
I'm trying to think at... Like, is there any more animation stuff? Or when do you declare... Oh, font face.
Okay. You got the low-hanging fruit here. So we got 3 more.
Media. I think I'm tapped out. I don't think I can think of the other ones. What are the other ones? Tell me.
So
stumped.
Yeah. See, I don't know if you would have gotten any of these 3 because I don't know if I would have either. I think I probably could have gotten the other ones except for supports. I never think of supports for some reason. So charset at charset. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's one that you see, but you never write, really.
You probably don't write yourself. Yeah. Especially like North American. Totally. Developer.
Charset, for those of you who don't know, defines the character set to be used by the style sheet, is usually set to UTF-8 as a string. Next one that Wes did not get was at namespace.
Never heard of that.
This tells the CSS engine that all its contents must be considered prefixed with an XML namespace. Yes, I've never heard of namespace. The last one here I've never heard of either, which is at page.
Oh.
You use at page?
Twice. Once when I automate this printing of my sticker envelopes. Mm-hmm. And second, when we go back to the episode where I sold t-shirts with TypeScript, we printed the label, the shipping labels. We used at page for that to define it in inches.
So you were dancing around it.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, you were dancing around it with the printing stuff. When you started saying that, I was like, so close. So at page describes the aspect of layout changes that will be applied when printing the document. So yeah, here you go.
That's a really good question. Like, that's not a good interview question, but that's an awesome.
If somebody got that wrong in an interview, I'd be like, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Totally. Wow. That was a good one. Okay.
Yeah.
Entertainment value. It was good.
That'd be a good one to ask on stage, although no, not anymore.
Which property is used to define overline and strike through on text?
Text decoration?
Nailed it.
Oh, I nailed it. Okay. I was going to say, is this a trick question?
I intentionally left underline out of the question.
I like strike through. I actually use strike through, not regularly, but I use it enough where it's not like shocking to me when it pops up.
I got a follow up question for that one.
Sure.
If you have a link that is black, how would you make it have an orange underline?
Oh, you know, because this is newer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I would do border bottom. I would do an absolute if I wanted an absolute.
Like a after pseudo element. Yeah, that's 2 ways. Yeah.
So is there a property that I'm just going to invent right now if it doesn't exist, which is text decoration style?
Text.
Or text decoration appearance? No. Text decoration.
There is decoration style.
There is. Whoa, okay.
But that has been around for a while. There is dash, dotted, double, solid, wavy.
Yeah. So is it just text decoration color?
It is. You got it.
Huh. So that exists.
A lot of people don't know about that one. Yeah.
I don't know about it. Yeah.
Yeah. You can change the color of the underline, overline, wavy underline, you name it.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I thought that'd be a little nice little bonus question for you since you just nailed the first one.
Bonus. Yeah. And I mean, I got it with some help, but yeah. Give me a bunch of easy ones.
Yeah. I think we're...
funny because I'm much better at CSS. So all of these questions seem easy to me for the most part, unless they're like obscure or like intentionally, you know, difficult here.
Oh man, I got a really hard one for you. I don't even know if it would be interesting.
I have one that's interesting, maybe not hard, but definitely interesting for the audience here. What is DOM reflow?
What is DOM reflow? DOM reflow is when the content of the document changes, generally when you're adding or removing items with JavaScript, that causes the DOM to re-render itself. Mm-hmm. And then the CSS has to be reapplied to the new document. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Yes.
What are some more things that could cause a reflow?
Adding or removing, hovering.
Adding or removing, hovering. Resizing the window.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Resizing the window.
Scrolling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Scrolling. Because especially if the browser doesn't render the stuff lower on.
Mm-hmm. Taking a measurement such as offset height or get computed style causes a reflow as well.
Really?
It says just taking a measurement. Yeah. Taking a measurement.
Why?
I don't know.
That's an interesting.
It is an interesting one. Yeah. So it says insert, remove or update element in the DOM, modify content on the page like text in an input box, move a DOM element, animate a DOM element, take a measurement, change a CSS style, change a class name, add or remove a style sheet, resize the window or scroll. So here are some tips to minimize browser reflow. In case you're wondering, reduce unnecessary DOM depth. Changes at one level of the DOM tree can cause changes at every level of the tree. So basically they're saying, don't add an unnecessary tree structure to your HTML if it doesn't need it, right? Which is something the Drupal developers need to learn. Am I right, guys? Okay. Just joking here. That used to be an old joke because Drupal just added a bunch of divs everywhere. It's like, you want to do anything? Just add 18 divs to do this. Okay. Minimize CSS rules and remove unwanted CSS rules. Okay. That seems obvious. If you make complex rendering changes such as animations, do so out of the flow with the document. Interesting. It says to use position absolute if you're making animation changes. So position absolute and then transform. That's interesting what that's about. Okay, next one is avoid unnecessary complex CSS selectors, descendant selectors in particular, which require more CPU to do selector matching. Interesting.
Oh, this is a good question.
Let's hear it.
And there's a couple of answers here. See how many you can get. How do you serve your pages for feature-constrained browsers? What techniques do you use? So you're using a new thing in CSS, and that's not available in older browsers. How do you handle that?
You use supports. Supports feature. Add supports.
What if the browser doesn't support supports?
You use something called HTML Fiverizer.
Like modernizer. Yes.
I totally blank on the name. I'm picturing the website. Use something like Modernizer that what it does is it adds classes based on what features are supported versus what features aren't supported. And it does so with JavaScript. Nasty JavaScript. It adds nasty JavaScript to your site. Yeah.
There's two different ways you can approach these features. Do you know what they're called?
Ooh, what they're called. One of them would be progressive enhancement. Is that considered one of them?
Yep.
So the two ways to do this, progressive enhancement, which is where you start with the thing that works for everybody and then you add the features that work for whoever can have it. Is the other one progressive degradation? I know that seems like a ridiculous thing to say, but
pretty much graceful degradation.
Graceful degradation.
Yeah.
Okay. I knew the word degradation was involved and I wasn't quite sure if it was graceful or not. So
it's good.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that you got those, given the how obtuse that question was. Good.
Hey, thank you. I do know some stuff about CSS sometimes. Yeah.
What do we got left? Yeah, we've probably got one more each.
Okay. One more each. Okay. Let's find a good one then. Ooh, this is fun. This is fun. This is fun. All right. What is the property that is used for controlling image-scroll? So if you want to determine if an image scrolls or not.
If an image scrolls?
If you can't get that, I'll give you a slight hint in the wording of this question that might give you the answer. But
do images scroll? What?
What is the property that is used for controlling image-scroll? Image-scroll as a thing.
I've never had an image scroll. Give me a hint.
So I think you're thinking of being in regards to an image element, which it's not. To give you a little bit more of a hint, it's about background images.
Oh!
The word background was going to blow it wide open, or at least.
Background scroll can be fixed or scroll or repeat. Is that right?
Not repeat, but What's the property that you use to set?
Background attachment.
Background attachment. Bingo. I would not have gotten that. That's great. Yeah, that's a good answer.
Good, good, good. Oh, man.
Background attachment. You can set background attachment to scroll, fixed, local, initial, and inherit. What's local? A background image with the scroll with the element's contents. The background image will scroll with the element's contents. So it's like if you're doing like overflow scroll zone maybe or something. Interesting. Background fixed used to be a thing that everybody did.
Yeah.
In like 1990. You'd set a background, you'd make a tile, you set it to be background fixed, and the content would scroll on top of it. It's
impossible to read. Yeah.
Quintessential 90s web development. Loved it.
I'm just reading up on local. That's interesting. You think like, oh, no, I know all this stuff. And then there's always these like weird little edge cases to things.
Yeah. Background attachment local. Interviewers, if you want to stump a interviewee, you put a question with background attachment local on it. And you say, what does this do? What is this thing?
Oh, man. I'm just going through these. Some of them are like, tell me how like the table display thing works.
I almost picked that one for you.
Yeah. I was going to pick that one for you, but I didn't think it would be very interesting because we would both be like, I don't know.
Wes, we're on the same page here. We both didn't pick that question for each other for the exact same reason.
Okay, this is a good one. Name the three different types of CSS gradients.
Canonical, is that how you say that word? One of a conical, one of them's a cone.
Ice cream cone.
Yeah, linear, and then mesh.
What's mesh?
Well, a mesh gradient is when you have like, it's like very apple-y, where they have gradients kind of coming in, kind of looks like a mush. Oh, it's like you did like a bunch of colors and then blurred it.
You can do that with layering gradients on top of each other. I've done that in the past. It looks pretty nifty.
We've kind of done too, but.
Cool. Yeah, you're right. Linear, radial, and conic.
Conic.
Are the three different types of gradients, and conic being very new to CSS.
Yeah, and I always wonder when to use that, but it's definitely more useful when you're trying to like replicate, you know, real items, skeuomorphic kind of style more than, I would be interested in seeing like some more artistic use cases of it.
Yeah. Well, that was a good episode of Stumped. I think we pretty much drained all the good questions from that, which is possibly good. It means that maybe me and Scott could get jobs as CSS devs at some point in our careers.
Hoping to this year, man.
Oh, man, there's one more here. List the 23 different display properties in CSS.
No, thank you. If it says list 23 of anything, I'm going to forget when I'm going to get through five of them and be like, what did I already do?
There's inline, block, flex, and grid. Inline, block.
None.
Contents, none. And then these are the weird ones. Run in.
What?
It displays an element as either block or inline, depending on context. Never done that. There's a whole bunch of table stuff. Like there's like 12 of them for table. And then initial and inherit.
Just weird. Cool.
Weird, weird, weird. So we went deep into the bowels of CSS. That was awesome. Let's move into some sick picks.
But before we do, we should talk about one of our sponsors, which is Cloudinary. Wes, would you like to talk about Cloudinary?
I would. Cloudinary is the website that is going to unleash the full potential of your media in your application. What does that mean? Well, they have a whole suite of hosted tools for managing your images and your videos as well. They can do things like crop, trim, resize, format auto. You can change the quality. You can do it really high quality. You can generate all of the different sizes you need for a picture output. You can convert videos into MP4s. You can add text over top of something. You can detect people. Literally anything you can think of with images. Huge, huge suite of tools in Cloudinary. So check it out at cloudinary.com or click the link in the show notes. Thank you, Cloudinary, for sponsoring.
Sick. Cool. All right. Let's get into the part of the show where we sick pick things that we pick that we find to be pretty darn sick. And I'm going to sick pick an app today. When I say app, I mean like for the computer, not for the phone. And this one is a web app, my favorite type of app. It's Height app, height.app. And Height app is, you could imagine if you want to picture in your mind's eye an application that was like, what if we took the lessons of Notion and made a really good to-do app? That is Height app. Height app is really great to do app. In fact, we've been working with this in our team for a couple of weeks here, just kind of setting it up. And we just like did our first like sprint setup with it. And all you had to do was like tag some things here or there and then set up like an automatic filter list. And it was so cool because it basically allowed us to keep our tasks organized in different lists and then tag them essentially with the sprint tag that we're doing. And then it automatically created like Kanban boards that were filtered by every member of the team. So everybody has their own Kanban board on one page and you can see them all. And it's gorgeous. This app is beautiful. You can just go to their website if you want to get a vibe for this thing. I mean, this is the type of app that you go to the homepage and you say, oh yeah, I like this. Really nice icons, really nice color. The app itself feels and functions very nicely. And we've been using it in our team with three or four people here and just sprint planning and stuff. It also connects via GitHub. So you can connect to GitHub. It has some integrations, Zendesk, GitLab, Zapier, Figma. One of them is Slab. I've never heard of Slab. There's also an API and webhooks integration. So if you're the type of person who's got to have their own custom tools for this type of stuff, you got webhooks integration. It sounds like an ad, but no, I've just been using this thing a whole bunch and I love it. So check it out, Height App. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just talking to you about it.
And Height App, if you want to sponsor the pod, let me know.
Yeah, they should definitely sponsor because this looks sick.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, I could do this as an ad read. I really enjoy this. Yeah.
I'm going to sick pick a little car charger. Last week, I sick picked the wireless charging, like the magnet MagSafe kind of charger that goes in your car. And I've been really happy with it. My only complaint was that it charged really slow. And I thought that the issue was that I was using like a gas station cigarette adapter, and it was. So I looked at it and it says it has to be at least 2 amps, which it was, but it was only 5 volts. So I got one that was a proper 12 volt and will do up to 12 watts out, which is very, very fast. It's from Anker. There's a couple other ones. There's like an Amazon Basics one as well that was a little cheaper, but the Anker stuff has just never let me down and it's always been rock solid. So I picked up that and the charging goes probably 1.8% faster, which is more than enough for me when I just slap it on, drive somewhere, you get there and you're up a couple percent, which is pretty good. So if you are looking for a good cigarette adapter, check out the Anker Mini Charger. It's also really slim. It doesn't stick out, which is really important to me because we used to have a really long one in the back for the kids to plug the iPads into, but the kids, they're so rough on like everything. You know this, right?
Everything. Oh my gosh. They're so rough on everything.
And the kids would step on it and then they popped out the whole panel where the cigarette adapters go in.
Oh my gosh.
And then they like shorted them and blew a fuse. And I was like, we need to get early, like a flush mount one so that they stop doing this. So good one.
Our kids are so rough on everything, man. We got like some new furniture. I'm just like, please, can this furniture just not get destroyed instantly, please?
Caitlin and I talk about that. We have this rug that we've had for like 7 years or something, and it's starting to, we've pressure washed it like 3 or 4 times, and it's starting to look rough. And we always are like, we should get a new one. And then we're like, nah, not yet. We'll wait until the kids stop like dropping chili on it.
Just completely demolishing and destroying everything. Oh, yeah.
That's one thing that really surprised me with parenting is how destructive the kids are with all your things.
Yeah. So much of it is they just cannot control those little bodies. They are just flailing. Just got so much ready to go. Like our son gets into these modes. We call them silly modes. When he gets so silly, you cannot do anything to stop the silly. I mean, you cannot. You couldn't stop the silliness with a bear tranquilizer. That kid is just like, when he's on it, he is on it. And yeah, that's tough.
Oh, that's good. Do you got a shameless plug?
A shamelessly plug leveluptutorials.com. We have a new course out. It is on Astro.build, which is really awesome. It is really just taking this like server first approach to the web that I really, really love. And it feels like, you know what it feels like, Wes? It feels like they were like, what can we do that's kind of svelte, kind of Vue-y, but is like the server-first approach, and then we're also not going to limit which front-end framework you want to use, whether it wants to be Vue, Svelte, or React, right? And so the whole thing is really, really neat. So if you're looking to build blazingly fast server-first apps, HTML sites, all sorts of really stuff, just going to be endlessly fast and ship way less JavaScript, check it out. The latest course on leveluptutorials.com is on Astro.build. Also, if you'd like to save some additional percentage on that annual subscription, save an additional 30% on that annual subscription. Make it really nice and huge a discount there. Use the coupon code SYNTAX and sign up for us Syntax folks who want to check out some of these new things like Astro Build, Svelte, or any of the amazing content courses we have coming from all these other content creators. So thanks so much. And Wes, what you got?
I got my advancedreact.com course recently added about 11 different videos in testing. We use React testing library inside of it along with Jest as a test runner. Big fan of both of those pieces of tech. So you can check it out at advancedreact.com. Use the coupon code SYNTAX. You'll get an extra $10 off the price there.
Sick. Cool. Sick. Well, that is it for this episode of Stumped. I think we both did really well. And actually, these are super useful because CSS questions, this is the kind of stuff you're going to get asked in an interview.
Totally.
This is the kind of stuff that will get shown up. Maybe not all of the different at rules, but who knows? Maybe they will. So we will catch you next Monday for a tasty treat.
Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.